Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for The Christophers, and today I'll be talking with author Frank Redman about his debut suspense novel, Elijah, and the ways in which it was influenced by his work in a home for abused and neglected children. We'll also address the fact that Frank was diagnosed with a rare and terminal form of brain cancer, and why he credits God with keeping him alive long past the time doctors predicted he would survive. Stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close, Tony Rossi, and my guest today is Frank Redman. Now, if you're a Dean Koontz fan, you might recognize Frank's name because Koontz dedicated his novel Saint Odd to him. Frank is an excellent writer himself, having recently penned his debut suspense novel Elijah, which was inspired by the years he spent working in a home for abused and neglected children. But there's more to Frank's story than just him being an author. In 2013, he was given 1 year to live after being diagnosed with a rare and terminal form of brain cancer. In light of that diagnosis, Frank considers every day a gift and a blessing, and we're going to discuss the faith that sustains him today. To tell us more, I'm pleased to welcome to Christopher Close-Up, Frank Redman. Frank, it's great to have you on the show today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, let me start by saying that your novel, Elijah, I finished it yesterday. I found it compelling. It was scary. It was disturbing. And at the same time, you also managed to inject humor into it. So, we're going to talk about those different elements today. But first, for my listeners, just tell us a little bit about the plot of this book, Elijah.
So there's, as far as messages, I mean, it's easier to start with the message. There's two main messages to the novel. One is that it doesn't make a difference what has happened in your life. With God's grace, you can overcome whatever it has been. You're not doomed to be a victim. And the second message is essentially that happiness is a choice. It's not a circumstance. Mm-hmm. So with writing from the perspective of those two messages, the main character has this paranormal ability. It's not really supernatural, but paranormal ability to communicate with animals. Now, he really views it as a curse because animals don't tell him about good things that happen. They only tell him about the bad things that happen, the bad mm-hmm. things that they see. And then along with this gift or curse, he is then compelled to act upon whatever it is that the animals tell him. He can't just ignore it. It's not his choice. He's literally compelled beyond his control to act upon whatever's happening. So he wants to mind his own business but the animals don't let him, and he stumbles across a child sex trafficking ring, and an animal tells him about it. Well, actually, there's some conspiracy going on with the executive board on a financial company, mm-hmm. and he finds out, and now he has to go try to rescue these kids.
Yeah. So. No, it's a very compelling part of the story. And I know that on the bio page of your website, it says that you and your wife worked at a children's home for 4 years, and you saw the impact that sexual, physical, and verbal abuse can have on a child. For people like myself who are not really familiar with that, tell me a little bit about what you learned about the ways in which abuse can change a child's heart, mind, and soul.
I believe that we're all born with a filter that, tells us what is right and what is wrong. Mm-hmm. Regardless of whether you're a Christian or not, we have that moral filter of knowing what is right or wrong. When a child is forced to do something that they realize and recognize is wrong, for example, forced into some sort of sex abuse act, then that filter breaks. Mm-hmm. And so with that breakage, there's a lot of social norms and things that they would normally have stayed away from that they now seek and pursue instead. And there's not peace is gone, righteousness is gone, mm-hmm. just a happiness is gone. I mean, basically, I mean, all these things are now gone. They're all broken.
Yeah.
And it's quite sad.
Yeah. Well, again, on your bio, you mentioned that you've stayed in touch with some of these kids and you've seen them grow up. So I'm curious, how can hope be reintroduced into these kids' lives? I've got to imagine it's quite a long process.
It's a very long process. And sadly, I mean, most of the kids don't ever recover, but thankfully the place that we were at was a Christian organization and we were allowed to talk to them about God.
Yeah.
And with God's grace, that's the key. I don't want to say it's impossible to turn your life around without God, but I'm saying it's pretty much impossible after that filter has been broken, that switch, you know, has been broken with, you know, God's grace is what basically is the only thing that's going to bring you out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a biblical message that with God, anything is possible. And first it helps to believe that in order to help it move forward. So no, I understand what you're saying, that it really is, you know, I would think it's much harder to do without God than with God.
Right. Exactly.
I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to author Frank Redman about his debut suspense novel. It's called Elijah. His website is inspirepublishing.guru or frankredman.com. That's R-E-D-M-A-N, frankredman.com. Now, the name Elijah certainly brings to mind, it has a biblical connotation. So I'm just curious, you know, how did the biblical character of Elijah influence your character Elijah? Is it just the name connection, or is there more there?
Well, there's more there because in the you know, God used the biblical Elijah as a prophet, obviously, but there are things that God had the animals, in this case, you know, birds, for example, do to help Elijah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's referenced in the novel, and that's to lead some believability, because, you know, obviously nobody can really communicate with animals and perceive their thoughts. So there's some suspension of disbelief that, you know, we have to go through to get the readers beyond so that they can believe the story and so that it has a greater impact.
Mm-hmm.
So the biblical Elijah, you know, he did not want to be where he was. And he was very vocal to God about that. And the character Elijah does not want to have that gift, and he's very vocal about that. And yet animals basically not only helped them, each of those two individuals, but they also pretty much enforce that they do what they have to do.
Yeah, yeah. No, and you do a good job of doing the connecting and with the biblical elements. Like you point out at one point, there's an example from the book of Numbers in which God uses a donkey to talk to Balaam using human speech. So I like that added spiritual and paranormal dimension.
Right, exactly. So again, you know, as you stated earlier, nothing's impossible with God.
Yeah.
He can make anything happen.
Right.
So.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm talking to Frank Redman about his debut novel. It's called Elijah. Now, one of the dedications in Elijah is to your dad, who you thank for believing in you when you didn't believe in yourself. So I'm just curious, tell me about him and how he encouraged you and believed in you.
Well, we didn't actually grow up together. My kind of a sad story. My brother was died when he was 3, when my mom was 6 months pregnant with me. And they married young and couldn't really handle it very well, so they got divorced.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't grow up with my dad, but
oh, wow.
I'd go up and visit every summer, spend the summers up in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from Texas, and so I spend time there. But he always, like everything that I was involved with, he was always involved with, whether it was baseball or music or anything like that. And when I felt called in like 2006 to start writing, I had a whole lot of doubt. I was like, I've never done anything like that before. It was kind of out of the blue. I mean, I enjoyed writing stuff in high school and college, but never, you know, obviously was never novel length or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote some short stories and he read those, and he's not a reader, but he read them and he really encouraged me kept me going when I was like, you know, this is silly. But he wouldn't let me stop, and I'm very thankful for that.
I'm talking to Frank Redmond about his debut suspense novel, Elijah. Again, the website is inspirepublishing.guru. And I should say, I finished the book last night, like I said, and one of the things I admire most about it is the way you integrate the faith aspect, the Christian aspect, into the characters. It's not like, you know, you stop the book and say, now we bring you a Christian message. Everything, right, exactly. Everything kind of flows naturally, organically, the way it comes out of Elijah and some of the other characters. That you really did an excellent job of working it in without, you know, kind of this hitting people over the head with it. So for just let me thank compliment you, very much. You on that. And just is that just kind of the way you are personally? Is that just a personality trait you worked into the novel?
Essentially, yes. I have my beliefs and I'm very firm in my beliefs, but I don't ever want to push my beliefs on somebody else. Mm-hmm. My style of evangelism, if you want to call it that, is to befriend people, develop relationships, and hopefully they see, you know, God's glory in my own life, and that permeates over into their life, and then they decide that they want to make the decision to pursue God and see what that's like.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's exactly what came out through the novel.
Yeah. No, I think you did a great job with it. And I mean, also, even though we're talking about some heavy subject matter here with the child abuse aspect, I have to point out that it's not all heavy. There's plenty of humor mixed in, too. I really love Tyler the dog, his wonderful comic relief with his love of Cheetos and Chips Ahoy and all that stuff. And Elijah's self-deprecating humor is also a great, you know, just to lighten the story a little bit. Is humor a natural part of your personality also, just like faith is?
It is, yeah. So we haven't started talking about Dean Koontz yet, but when the first novel that I wrote, he read it, he's like, I don't see any Frank in this.
Mm.
And so he told me, really encouraged me and admonished me that I need to put Frank into Elijah. And so I said, okay. So I put a whole lot of me, as much as I could, that, you know, that would keep the story going, of myself into that character.
Right.
But there is, you're right. I mean, and then it is, there, part of the, you know, material really is dark. And so, and it's depressing, and, you know, it makes people angry. And so that you really do have to inject some humor into it to lighten it up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a kind of a storytelling secret, you know, kind of like going on a roller coaster. If you kept everything on a level path, that's not going to necessarily excite the reader. But if you go way down in the deep places and come up to really high spots, you know, that's a more entertaining read, and that gets them more engaged. Hopefully they finish the novel and are inspired by God's ability to help us overcome whatever is going on in our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And you just mentioned Dean Koontz. I mentioned him in my introduction. So tell us a little about, you have a friendship and a mentorship with him, but even before you established a personal connection, how big a fan were you of his work? Did he influence your desire to be a storyteller at all?
He did, exactly. So in 2006, when I started doing this stuff, I was kind of searching around for an established writer whose style I liked, because, I mean, I had no clue of what I was doing. And a friend suggested Dean, and I read a few of his novels and loved them. And essentially, I wanted to find somebody's style that I can emulate until I found my own voice or my own style, until I, you know, figured out the structure and character development and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so I read some of Dean's novels and wrote him a letter, and just out of the blue, I mean, it's like, you know, writing Bono of U2 or something. I have no idea whether they're going to reply or not. So mm-hmm. I wrote him a letter, and he replied back with a form letter saying, sorry, really busy, you know, but here's my real autograph. This isn't a monkey signing it. And then so I asked him about, you know, certain questions on technique and things like that. So he handwrote some answers in addition to the form letter, and provided some printed material to some interviews that he had done.
Okay.
And so that helped a lot. And so I got those questions answered. And I wrote them back, said thank you. And then a few months later, I followed up, because I didn't want to inundate them with letters. A few months later, I followed back with some more questions. And then he replied personally, and kind of started off from there. And later I found out that it's probably more now. So 2006, he was getting about 50,000 letters a year. He doesn't
wow.
do email. And so, I mean, obviously, you know, God had my letter bubble up to the top before it was even read, let alone responded to.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, it's a story like that, that does make you believe that there is a great author, you know, who is also kind of helping us write our lives down here.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah. Well, now, again, with Dean, I've read a number of his novels, and I love the way that he incorporates faith into his storytelling. Is that something you learned to do from him, or do you think that would have come out of you naturally, like when he told you to just put more Frank in the novel?
Right. Both, actually. When I was first called to write, I didn't know why I was called to write. Mm-hmm. And then on top of, you know, trying to figure out what I was doing, I was trying to figure out why I was doing it. And one of the things I noticed from Dean's novels is that every single one of them is about hope.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, and something clicked in my head, and I was like, hope, there it is. That's what I need to be writing about. And for people, most people who have, you know, strong hope, then there is a presence of God mm-hmm. in their lives. And so that did permeate throughout the novels. And so, as you mentioned, I think there would have been some of that naturally, but it came out, I guess, more easily knowing that that was a purpose to write.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's a great insight about, yeah, because you're right, he writes suspense novels, people do dark things in them, but there's always that element of hope at the end.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think people who read Elijah will get that same sense of hope. I'm talking to Frank Redman about his novel, Elijah. You can find it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And I want to now talk about, since we're talking about hope, you know, there's a part of your story that would almost seem to diminish hope, but yet, again, you are still a person of hope. So, and that's in April 2013, you were diagnosed with, let me see if I say this right, gliomatosis cerebri, a rare form of terminal brain cancer that only 100 people are diagnosed with annually in the United States. When you got that diagnosis, what kept you from just giving in to despair?
Well, immediately upon the diagnosis, I did go into despair.
Okay.
I was essentially a train wreck for a few days, despite, you know, being a devout Christian, a strong belief in God and Jesus Christ. I was a train wreck for a few days, but mm-hmm. I think a lot of it was, you know, why? And at that time, you know, I had young children and I had a successful IT career and, you know, left my wife, and just all these things are just, you know, Satan was trying to picture all that was going to be gone immediately. I was given 1 year to live if lucky. They quote, if lucky, that's literally what they said.
Yeah.
And it took me a few days, and then I realized, you know, once I got over myself and realized, okay, so as a friend of mine likes to say, a good pastor friend of mine, let's unpack this. So how did this happen?
Mm-hmm.
Cancer is evil.
Yeah.
God is not in the evil-dealing business.
Mm-hmm.
So God did not give me cancer. So how did I get cancer? Well, that means Satan struck me with cancer by giving me cancer and by me being a witness with God's grace, then he's essentially beating Satan at Satan's own game, saying that because he's going to use the cancer for God's good.
And I mean, the fact that you said your diagnosis, they gave you 1 year if you were lucky, and it's long past 1 year now. So to what do you credit the fact that you are still here talking to me right now?
Well, essentially, I don't mean to keep harping on it, but it's God. I mean, everything is God. But mm-hmm. here's the deal. So most people that get this kind of cancer, they die within a few weeks. They typically have it before, you know, they get diagnosed. So when God created me, he knew that I was going to get gliomatosis cerebri someday. And so he gave me this mutant gene, IDH1. I guess I'm some sort of an X-Man now. But it is used for, you know, it would be used for the specific type of chemo that would be used for the specific type of cancer that mm-hmm. I have. So
yeah.
The people that with the, you know, that die pretty soon after after diagnosis, they don't have that mutant gene. And
mm-hmm.
so it's all, you know, because of the grace of God that I'm
yeah.
still here.
It's wonderful that you have this extra time and the fact that you were able to finish this novel. And, you know, again, just going back to the God angle, you know, I've interviewed a number of other people who faced medical crises in their lives, and some have said that they came to see Jesus working through their family and friends. So I'm just curious, in what ways have you seen the love and the heart of Jesus reflected in maybe your wife, your kids, and those around you as you're dealing with this illness?
So some people actually, some good friends, they actually kind of moved away from me because when you have a friend who ends up getting this rare type of cancer, it's terminal, and the cancer still exists today, and you're supposed to die soon, they kind of think about their own mortality, and they don't want to think about their own mortality, so they kind of pull away. Now that I'm still alive, then they've kind of started circling back a little bit. But that's the rare occasions. And those are people that, you know, they don't necessarily have a faith or hope that they can lean on. Now, there's the other side where our church and, you know, the family, of course, you know, really stepped up and helped us a lot. Our church has been a tremendous support. You know, I had to go. I had to do daily radiation. My daily radiation treatments were at Charles Sammons Cancer in Dallas, and we live about an hour away from there. And so Sherry had to start, my wife's name is Sherry, she had to start working full-time so we can get insurance benefits because I was, you know, no longer working. And she couldn't take me every single day to go get these radiation treatments done. And so, but other friends in our church, I mean, they set up a ride schedule, and they would take me there, hang out at the hospital while I had my treatments done, and bring me back home. And they really stepped up and huge support. You know, obviously the whole dinner thing, they would provide dinner. And, but the most important part of it was the prayer. I mean, I knew that this had all happened for a reason. It wasn't a coincidence. And if it happened for a reason, then God was going to use it. And just knowing that all these people were praying for me and still are praying for me, it's just a huge blessing.
No, and it kind of goes back to what you said earlier about happiness being a choice, not a circumstance, because some people could look at what you're going through and they could just focus on the bad part, and yet you're seeing God's love around you and other people. So it really kind of ties into the Christopher ideal that we kind of promote on this show, that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness. So let me ask you in our final minute, how do you think that idea kind of works its way through Elijah and in your own life, this idea of lighting a candle in the darkness?
A lot of the emphasis of Elijah is raising awareness on abuse. And so if I can just tell a story. So we had the book launch at our church. My wife is the music secretary there, and now she's doing other jobs there as well. So we're selling this book that's got strong depiction of sex abuse, nothing explicit, no language, no description of anatomy or anything like that. But if I were just to say there's a lot of sex abuse in the country, I mean, that would just gloss over everybody's, you know, just fly right over the heads. Everybody knows that. That's no big deal. And so I gave this speech to her, because we're selling the book at our church where Sherry works, to her friends. And so I gave this speech explaining the prolific sex abuse that is in our country, and I'll cut to the chase and just say that there's, well, 60% of people that are sexually abused never even admit it. That's an estimation, because we don't know, because 60% don't even admit it. So with that, there are 42 million admitted sex abuse survivors in the United States today.
Wow.
And it's just an astronomical number. And so I did the math. And so nobody can really fathom what 42 million means. And so I did the math, and the 37 largest cities in the United States, their combined populations equal 42 million.
Wow.
And that's, again, with 60% who never tell anybody. So trying to get the awareness out, because people don't want to do anything about it. They know some form of abuse is happening even next door, in their neighborhood, but they don't want to get involved. They, you know, it's not their child. They don't want to be in the, you know, get involved in the conflict. but I'm trying to get people to realize you are much more capable of defending yourself than that 8-year-old child is capable of defending him or herself.
Mm-hmm.
If nothing else, you can call the authorities and don't just turn a blind eye to what's going on. And so that's a major part of why there is such a dark depiction of the abuse in Elijah, so that it gets people to wake up and do something about it.
Yeah. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up, and I've been talking with Frank Redmond about his novel, Elijah. Like you just said, the novel really is lighting a candle in the darkness for those who are suffering abuse. It's meant to inspire others to make a difference for these young people, to raise awareness about the problem. And it does it in a personal way by sharing the story of this character named Elijah who can communicate with animals. It does it in an entertaining way. It always keeps the focus on the humanity of the child, that the fact that these are human beings, children of God being abused. And Frank is really lifting people up by writing this book because it's a story of hope, just like his own story in dealing with cancer is a story of hope and a story of faith about God's presence always being there. We just need to perceive him and follow his road. So again, you can go to inspirepublishing.guru or frankredman.com, and you can get more information about the book, Elijah. Again, I got it off Amazon, but it's on other venues too. And Frank, thanks so much for sharing your story and for being on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me, Tony. It was a great pleasure talking to you.
Now, before we end today's show, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
The grace of God has a way of sneaking up on us. And if we're not paying attention, it might even slip right past us. That's why the Christophers have prepared a news note called Opening Yourself to God's Grace. It will help you become more aware of the moments in your life when God makes his presence known in unexpected ways. Moments that can draw beauty out of brokenness and allow you to experience the depths of his love. To request your free copy of Opening Yourself to God's Grace, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. That's 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. If you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.